that note, let's keep the round of applause going, and let's bring out our first panel. It's going to be, we have a GM panel. So we have the general manager of the Markham Thunder, Chelsea Purcell, coming up, and the assistant general manager of the Toronto Furies, Katrina Gallis. Ladies, can you join us on stage? Hello, welcome. You have mics like hidden away. I couldn't find mine either.
All right, so let's get right into it. Why don't you guys tell us a bit about yourselves and your background in hockey?
Yeah, we discussed it. We think it's awkward when hosts like introduce people. It's just weird, so you guys can do it. We're also, you have the broken chair too?
Yeah.
We'll fall together.
I'm feeling pretty stable over here, I don't know.
So ladies, do you want to maybe introduce yourselves to the audience? Some of them already know you, but do you want to just give us, I guess, like a Spark Notes introduction on who you are and what you do?
Sure. Well, I'll jump in here. So my name is Katrina Gallis, and I work with the Toronto Furies. I'm the assistant general manager as well as director of business strategy, and sort of help our GM, Sammy Joe Small, with a little bit of everything. So live streaming and sponsorship and marketing and everything in between. So it's all hands on deck, as it is for every team. My background on the business side is really in the sports marketing world. So I've worked a few Olympic Games and in the beer industry and the sports product industry. So I'm really excited to be able to jump into the women's sport spectrum, particularly because I grew up playing high-level hockey myself. And all the way through university, and when I graduated, there was no CWHL. So therefore, I never had a chance to play in the league, but I'm able to support in another way, and that's really exciting.
Good stuff.
My name's Chelsea Purcell. I'm the GM of the Markham Thunder. I started off by playing actually for Team Alberta, Edmonton Chemos prior to that, played Team Alberta, which turned into the Calgary Inferno, and then came out to Toronto and happened to get the opportunity to take over the GM side of Markham, and so I learned from Laura Dupuy for 2 years and then took over after that when it became full-time, and just recently in January I've actually taken over this full-time as like a full-time career, so.
Good stuff.
It's good times. Hockey all the time.
That's great. I mean, you love it, so that's why you're in the industry, in the game. So that's great. Yeah. Rather have people who love it than hate it.
Does help.
So I guess our...
Does anybody hate it in this country? Does anybody hate hockey?
Does anyone hate hockey that's here?
No, well, I hope not here. You were in the wrong place.
Yeah. There's a pool upstairs for you. All right, so we're here. This is our Clarkson Cup preview show. So, I mean, the first question that I'm interested in hearing from both of you is, you know, Clarkson Cup's going to be hosted at Coca-Cola Coliseum, the home of the Toronto Marlies. It was just announced today that NHL Network's going to be broadcasting the game for U.S. fans. It's going to be on Sportsnet. It's going to be on TVA in French.
Woo!
And, you know, what does it mean to the both of you, and how important are partnerships like that for the game, for your teams, and for the league?
I think it's everything, basically. If we don't have that, we don't have the reach, we don't have the exposure, and without those, we don't even barely have a league. So we need to be visible, and if we aren't visible, we're not going to grow and take those next steps to be able to get to the one league that everybody wants to get to.
Absolutely. I think it's the foundation for the growth of any sport is having exposure, and whether it's broadcast or live stream, different languages, different countries, I think every element to exposing and elevating the game and actually bringing fans closer to being able to follow their team on a consistent basis is the crux of how you really build on the successes year over year.
So you mentioned the live stream. So how important do you guys think that is for the growth of the game, both in the regular season and then even into the postseason?
Yeah, personally, I think it's super important. it always adds another dynamic to every game when you can tune in and watch what's happening. And you may not be able to go to every game. I mean, ultimately, the most fun is to be right there, front and center, and see the game live and up close. But obviously, people have lives, as you do, and you want to be able to follow along even if you can't show up. So I think this has, what we've learned is that it's enabled our fans to not only follow us when we're at home and playing in Toronto, but when we go on the road, it allows everyone else to tune in, and also gives us a platform as a team. So we do a lot of intermission interviews with people who are visiting from out of town or connected to the game or a partner of ours, and it's the most we can do to really help elevate their support and interest as well.
So this one's for you, Katrina. So the Furies won their final five games to clinch the last playoff spot. How impressed were you with their performance?
We were so excited. We had so much momentum going into the final weekend. Obviously, it was such a close game with their friends over here in the north side of the city. And I think that ultimately speaks to how amazing the game is right now. I mean, it mattered. And, and if you look at, as an example, college sport in the States, every game matters down there. And that's really what happened with our final game. More for us. I mean, Markham was already kind of in the playoffs.
Oh, yeah.
So
prior to the game.
But we were quite confident that we could squeak in there in fourth place, and that's what we did. And then I think both teams had an amazing three-game series against, for us, Calgary, and Montreal for Markham. And to take a playoffs to game three is really all the league can ask for, because it just gives, a lot of extra visibility to the league and the game, and the games are a little more high stakes.
I'm very professional.
We all are. It's okay.
And Chelsea, I guess an opportunity, to pump your team's tires a little bit. You had an exceptional regular season. Like Katrina said, you took Montreal to three games, and you have two of your players nominated for some pretty big awards at the awards tomorrow. So what does that mean to you as a GM? Like, that must be, proud moments for a general manager to see what happened this season.
Yeah, I mean, I was really hoping to go 2 for 2, but, you can only hope, I guess. No, it was a really good season. We had a struggle at the start of the season, just as we did last year, and we were able to fight back. And I think the China trip, where we took the points, the 5 points out of the three games, and that gave us a little more momentum. Last year when we went to China, we got 1 point, so it was a big change for us. And then we continued to grow, and we fought some battles, and we had some rough games, and then we'd come back and have some good games. I mean, we didn't want to lose 3 in a row to Toronto prior to playoffs, so that was tough. And we wanted to win that game against Toronto. I mean, we didn't want to let Toronto into playoffs. They're a rival team, and we wanted to beat them. So it was tough losing, especially going to playoffs. And the nice thing was that we beat Montreal the game prior to that. So going into Montreal, we knew that we could beat them. And that game didn't take away from us. It was just, you just never want to lose to Toronto, basically.
So, I get that. It's a good
for
rivalry.
Me as a GM, I'm most disappointed about the season for losing our season series to Toronto.
Hey.
But we love the honesty.
But the stadium, the rinks were full, right? I think that's the best part, because you get to draw upon rival fans, too, and make sure that everyone gets, gets to get up close and personal and see the players and stay afterwards. And I think that's really important.
Yeah, it's
market,
great.
This oversaturated sports crazy market.
Yeah, no, and the rivalries are great for the game. You see them all the time in the men's game. So I think it's great, Chelsea, that you hate Toronto so much.
Yeah. We still love you.
Thanks. I'm going to go off riff for a second. Why is Pikachu your mascot? Because I've been to a number of games, and you have a great atmosphere in Markham. I love it. But then, I'm always so shocked. Like, Pikachu, a Pikachu just appears in the rink, and I'm like, what? Like, it's awesome. Is it just because Thunderbolts, Pikachu?
So, yeah, Pikachu has a lightning bolt as his tail and shoots lightning bolts. So it was very difficult to find a mascot with low budgets. We were able to get one off of Amazon last year. So somebody threw out the idea, and I was like, yeah, great. So let's do it. He only makes it out about a couple times a year, but he
made it out. Yeah, I've seen him twice. Yeah. I've seen him twice. I was pumped, to be honest.
We find a volunteer to get in him, and yeah, so.
It's good.
Do the kids, like, love him? Do they attack?
Yeah, you need a security guard with Pikachu.
Actually,
he made it to our parade this year, so kind of sat in a BMW in a convertible. And
oh, wow.
He's so bougie.
Bougie Pikachu. And my colleague had to pull me back. Like, I saw the Pikachu, and she was like, dude, like, no, like, we're here to do a story. Like, you can't go hang out with Pikachu. Like, we got to go, like, interview players, do our job. I'm like, but it's childhood.
A really cool story with him was our last game. We had the Blind Hockey Association out, and three little girls went up to him, and I was told, was it you, Katrina? She was said that they were feeling him to see what he felt like. And it was, like, such a touching moment, because I'm like, huh, he actually has a meaning other than exciting kids. Like, it was really cool.
That's great. That was special. And Pikachu and Kipling are also rivals.
Kipling, where did she get those eyelashes?
Sure.
Yes, it took a while to grow those out.
It's Maybelline.
Maybe she's born with it.
So, and I mean, once the Clarkson Cup is over, we'll go back on the serious side for a second. Once the Clarkson Cup is over, obviously there's world championships for the national team, but then, you know, all eyes kind of move towards the draft. Are there any up-and-coming players that we could maybe see in the CWHL? Like, have you been, you know, kind of scouting and trying to recruit anyone yet?
Yeah, I think Gable's a top pick for
both of us. I was
going to
say, is there going to be, like, a healthy rivalry? She's from Kitchener, and she's Patty Kaz's finalist. Is there going to be a bit of a crosstown battle to try to get her?
Yeah, it's already happening.
Bribes have begun.
Yeah. And then hopefully all of Team USA.
I think we can all say that it'd be great to have them all come over here. Everyone. Squished in together, one league.
And that, like, this happened to me last year, is that when I was hoping some of them would come over, you don't want to take some of the Hockey Canada girls coming in, because you're like, well, what if all of a sudden Coyne comes in and enters a draft and you could get her? So the new idea of signing players prior is helpful, but then you don't want to sign too early, because it's, you want to know who's actually going to enter the draft. And so this year I think it's like, I want Gable, but if Coyne entered the draft, I'd also want Coyne. Over Gable, probably.
She's pretty fast, I hear. And I guess, what is that? What is that process like? Because I think, you know, I don't think everyone really knows about that. And I think it's certainly interesting. So, like, if Coyne comes over, would she go in the draft? She wouldn't just sign? Because when you signed Megan Bozick, she wasn't
in
the draft.
She was a free agent because she played for Toronto before. So anybody that's played in the CWHL is a free agent.
Okay.
So there's only a few of them, I think, now, because USA is pretty young. But most of them would have to enter the draft, so there could be a big draft year, ideally. We all can hope.
Have we heard rumblings that this is something that might happen?
I mean, we're trying hard to get all of them over, so it's just pushing it. Like, there's obviously, like, nobody's confirmed, but you saw the Coyne article, and she said she'd make a move if she needs to, and I think that excites us all whenever, like, when I read that, I was like, yes, screenshot.
Did you start, like, making calls immediately?
Yeah. So how much do I have
to
pay? Start
the talks, right? Yeah, I think
we have a Pikachu, Kendall.
I think it's exciting because there's a lot of women's hockey this year. Obviously, the Worlds are coming up, and we just had Team Canada dominate in the under-18s. And, you know, Courtney, our head coach, was a part of that coaching staff. So she had a good look at a lot of players playing in that event. And so there's so many times throughout the year where you can really hone in on what that up-and-coming talent is, whether it's new talent or college talent or U.S. talent or wherever it comes from, as long as it comes this way.
And I'm sorry, I'll just throw in, if anyone has any questions, just shoot your hand up, yell them out. I'm sure you're probably sick of me already, and I talk a lot. So if you guys have a question you want to throw out there, just put your hand up, and we can either come down with a mic, or you can just yell. Like, does anyone have anything? Okay, we'll keep talking.
I have one.
go.
So both of your teams have a lot of national team players. So what does that dynamic look like for you guys when they go away to, say, like a rivalry series?
Well, I mean, it happened. So, and we played Toronto, and it wasn't good for us. Me and Sammy actually talked about it. I was like, she's like, I think we're deeper than you, but you have more scoring ability. And I was like, I actually think we're deeper than you, and we just didn't score. So, I mean, ideally, like, going into that weekend, I thought we were benefiting because they were losing Spooner and Nurse and Fast, and it didn't help us.
And I think, I mean, it's never easy because you don't have a choice. You're kind of pulled away, and that was a new series and, of course, a really important one leading into Worlds. But at the same time, at least because all the national team players are spread out around the league, everyone's going to lose great talent. And, you know,
everybody's kind of on the same playing field, for sure.
Yeah, but and then it helps us. Like, we had to pull from our 40-man roster. And but then it gives opportunity for the fourth liners and third liners to step up and show where they are, and I think it's good. Like, it's basically where we were last year. So it's a good opportunity for other players to step up, but it's tough when you're going to playoffs and it happens 2 weeks prior to it and you're playing with a whole different team.
And I know the Furies had some issues with the China trip. Did you have similar problems with players having to stay home because of work and school commitments? Did you have a really, really short roster when you went? Sorry I didn't look this up sooner, but I guess if both of you want to talk about some of the issues with the China trip.
Yeah, we ended up going with three lines, but it was kind of nice because three lines is ideal. Like, you want to just roll three lines, and when there's not four lines, I could call out some players that don't like when there's four lines rolling. So three lines are preferred, and it helped us, I think, gain a lot of momentum, and we played well with it. But we had one player pull out a week prior to us going, and that, like, I was calling every player that I could on our 40-man roster to try to come to China, and it's not really easy to take a week off of work, so it's tough. But yeah, you just kind of go with it. And, like, we had a great trip this year. It was amazing. We got a lot of opportunities. We traveled to Hong Kong a couple times. And overall, it's just a great experience to be able to see another culture and experience it. And for the players that didn't get to go, it's tough, like, with work and school. But yeah, most players were able to make it work, and they know that it's a sacrifice, but it's worth going.
Did you guys get the custom suits too?
No, Howie wanted to get one. That was like her goal, to get
so
a maroon.
They looked so sweet.
Yeah, she didn't. She like went with like a fabric panel of what the color she wanted, and then didn't get it. And then, yeah, Montreal and Boston both did it. So
ours are still in the mail.
Oh, you guys got them too?
Well, it was Chinese New Year's when we were there, and so they basically told us, we can do your whole team, but you just won't get them before you leave.
Oh, because
so
I know.
So you just got to trust that they'll show up.
Yeah, I know Montreal got pink ones and the burgundy ones, and I remember being there, and I'm like, again, trying to be professional, like, do my job, and like, Poulin's walking in this like dope like red suit, and I'm just staring at her like, it has nothing to do with like her skill. It was just like, that outfit is unreal, and I was just staring at her like, wow,
so effortlessly cool.
But so cool. I could never pull that off. So
but just to add to that, I think the other dynamic is we should have brought you one. You should have given us your sizes. The time difference. Like, we didn't, you know, you kind of forget that you're light years ahead, you know, into the future over there. And then plus you have a long trip. So it's almost like a double hit on the way there and on the way back. And, you know, we felt really bad for Calgary as well at the end, sort of finishing their season off there and then having to head straight into, I think, coming out of rivalry, going to China, coming back here, going into playoffs, going into Worlds. Like, it ends up being a lot.
Even for our players, like our national players, we went from opening weekend, from them, they started September camp, had 1 weekend off prior to the opening weekend of CWHL, and went straight until Christmas break. So, like, Stacey, she struggled, like, at the end of it, her body was just, like, worn down, basically. So she missed her games against Boston, I think. But we had a few injuries come at that point because they've been playing for months straight. And they didn't have a break because they went right to Four Nations, which was our team's weekend off. So they went to Four Nations and then went right into to China, flew from Saskatoon, and it was just a lot. And then came back home. We were, I think, the only team in the COHL that didn't get a weekend off coming back from China, which hurt us. So it was just like constant. Like we were, I think the Team Canada girls went 8 weeks in a row or 12 weeks in a row maybe. But it was a long stretch for them. So, like, that wears on the body, and it's tough.
Yeah, and especially when, you know, you don't have the same facilities as the Toronto Maple Leafs do, and, you know, Mitch Marner's warming up for a game, and he literally hits, like, six different tables to get treatment on every which possible thing. You know, it's not, it's just not the same. There isn't the same treatment in the game yet, right?
Yeah, I think all teams have put as many things in place as we're each capable of in terms of that kind of support, and, you know, trying to, if we don't have staff to do it, then finding solutions to actually make things available for players in the moment that they need. I see a question over there.
Thank you.
Yeah. But yeah, just to add to that, I mean, I think it's a good question for Renata, too, because she came straight from a really intense weekend in San Jose and jumped on a plane from California to China, jumping right into all that. So,
and she played. I talked to her on the phone when she was, like, on the way to the airport, and she told me, she's like, yeah, she was on her way. I think she was in China, and she's like, yeah, I just traveled for 24 hours, and I'm about to go to, like, morning skate, and I'm like, why?
She made it.
Yeah. You had a question?
Yeah, I do. So
you can yell it, or do you want a microphone?
No, I yell.
You'll yell? Okay.
So in the next couple of weeks across Canada, girls are going to be heading into their provincial tournaments, and then ultimately after that to the ESL Cup. As a general manager, assistant general manager, I know your main source, obviously, is Division I down in the States. But how much attention do you pay to these lower level tournaments where girls are developing, or do you sort of wait until they get to the Division I, maybe even the Division III level before you start looking at them?
Great question.
Yeah, we just look at university and college. I think the biggest thing because of that is when players get to university or college, they don't know if they're going to continue on for that. So there's, for us, and even I think recruiting just really started a couple of years ago, it's really who enters the draft, then you draft them. So it's a whole new idea of recruiting and everything. So I think that just happened the last couple of years where we're really, like Gable speaking of, this is the earliest because we have the pre-signing now, is that we can go out and target her early. Otherwise, we always know we're drafting against each other. Nobody else has to draft except us two, so we're always battling against Toronto. But for us, I know it's, players have to get to college to be able to continue to develop, so there's not a need for us to go and reach the juniors in the midget A's.
Can you take that back for a second? You said nobody else has to draft except us.
So how the draft works is you enter your area, just because we don't pay full time yet, is that you enter either Montreal, GTA, China, Boston, or Calgary, and then the GMs draft from that area. So you're just selecting players. It's basically a selection, except the GTA we draft against each other. Except for that's why we added in. So what happened last year was that Ambrose got traded for 2 first-round draft picks and 2 third-round draft picks or something ridiculous that should have never happened. And because of that, we had to fight against that to make sure that we were still going to be okay for the next 3 years, because Toronto was getting an extra draft pick ahead of us every time. So what they added in was that you get 2 pre-signings. So for the 2 pre-signings last year, Toronto got 3 pre-signings because they had Montreal's first round draft pick. So Montreal only had 1 pre-signing, which doesn't affect them because they're still going to sign everybody that enters Montreal. The only thing that really gets into it is players can, they can enter 3 picks. So they could enter GTA, Montreal, and Boston. So if somebody entered GTA, then Montreal could go and draft them before we draft them, because we're selecting other GTA players that are maybe only selecting GTA. So in the end, GTA usually gets screwed.
Chelsea's off record, you know.
So another good question. Have you ever thought of doing a particular list on the side of the draft, so you draft your players, but in addition, you might want to outside of that duo protection list. So you could draft somebody like Ambrose, but she's not your draft. But if she does decide to cross the border, she's yours. You've got a lot of work to do on that.
I think the draft is, it's in a way it's simple, but in another way it's extremely tricky.
Yeah,
when you start getting into the three picks, but at least, like, you know, from,
you know what I'm saying, rather than, it's not a direct draft, it's a protection list, so that you're able to choose an American who's still playing down maybe with the WHL.
And we could do that if they entered the draft. So I've even thought about, like, oh, what if I get a third-year university player to enter the draft, so I can protect them for the year they enter the draft.
And that's the draft. You may have players down on the stage playing NWA.
But you can protect any players until they enter the draft.
Yeah.
So they need to be in the draft for you to be able to draft them. Does that make sense?
That's what he's saying.
But essentially, like, with the draft, a lot of it, you know, the whole draft is, you know, the teams can pick... To me, the draft is different because it's more, the players are essentially choosing where they're going to go and play hockey. In the GTA, it's a little bit different because there's two GTA teams. But essentially, you know, Sarah Nurse, she is GTA, but I don't think she had a single conversation with an intention to go to Markham. It was always, she went with Sammy Joe Small right away. It didn't matter. That was just going to happen because, you know, she picked Toronto. So with the draft, it's the players who are essentially going to play hockey to make only a couple $1,000s. So the league is giving them the freedom to say, where do you want to play? We're going to make this happen as much as possible.
And I think that's right, because a lot of players, obviously, as you all know, work. And so it depends where they work and what their jobs are and where they live. And you can't just quit your job because you got drafted somewhere else.
Yeah, we can't force them to move yet until it's a full-time...
Players are playing down in the States.
Yeah.
WHL.
I think with that...
If they're the free agents, then we can sign them now.
But if they're not free agents, they're playing down there, why not have a supplemental draft just for protection so that you can choose a player plan? Zavinos. One of you guys, one of the teams, CWHL, will choose Zavinos in this supplemental draft. So if she ever decides to come across the border, you know where she's going.
But what's the difference of the draft then?
Zavinos is gonna choose where she wants to play at the end of the day.
Wait, like you said earlier, I can't choose anybody because I gotta wait.
I think the thing is there's a lot going on between the CWHL and the NWHL, and if the CW starts saying, we get Zabados, if your league fails, that's going to be a big problem.
Does the NWHL work this way? Like, you don't have to enter the draft, they can just sign anybody?
They just, yeah. Yeah, it's not just really a draft. So it's very difficult. Like, I understand what you guys are saying to have... Yeah, and it is growing pains, and at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what team says what. The player's going to go where the player's going to go because that's where their job is and where their house is.
And I think the core of your question was around young talent.
Initially.
Just to speak to that too, Courtney, our head coach, also coaches in the Oakville Hornet organization, and so that's another way where, I mean, unofficially, you're getting close to certain talent, and you're watching, you know, in advance who's emerging, and then they go, as Chelsea said, away to college, and you see them develop even further. And so it's definitely a first look at that age. And for us playing in MasterCard Center, that's the home of the Etobicoke Dolphins. So there's a lot of opportunity for not only our coaches to maybe go to some of those games, but for those girls to come and see what it would be like to play in the CWHL. And I think that's really the greatest opportunity from a venue standpoint to really, you know, have those midgets come in and watch the caliber of play that was possible.
When I was with the Natural talking with the Arrows, we used to get players from the juniors. We did the same thing. Mm-hmm. We were players from the juniors.
Yeah. Having the players come from the grassroots teams up to the pros to see, it just gives them an opportunity to say, like, oh, there is something I can do, you know. They know that they can go play hockey. That's obviously an option for people now. And you know, bringing the junior teams in to go and watch the pro teams, it just shows them, like, continue playing hockey because there's going to be somewhere where you can continue playing. But I think, you know, I think with Chelsea's point, too, was saying, you know, it's difficult to start scouting at this age because you don't know if they're going to continue playing hockey. Like, you have no idea when a and I was looking at the numbers, actually, 5,000 girls dropped out. Like, they just stopped playing hockey in the last year. So, like, it's difficult to start, you know, putting in the man hours when there's so few people working for these CWHL teams to go and start scouting at a grassroots level when you don't necessarily know if they're going to continue playing until next year.
And I think the other hot topic around that is where the league's going to be in 4 years from now.
It's hard to look at a 15-year-old because you don't know what, by the time they're ready to come in the league, what's the league going to be?
Yeah. And I think, too, these days, and I know this is a big topic in North America, multi-sport athletes are really, it's an important factor in your development. And so when you're playing all these different sports when you're growing up, you ultimately at some point have to choose. And you may be a phenomenal hockey player, but then you're going to take a scholarship for soccer or track and field. And you don't know that until you're offered the scholarship when you apply to the school. So it really is, you know, with the lack of time that we all have, and I think, you try to put your effort where you can maximize and optimize it.
Well, with that, we're going to take a quick 10-minute break. So you guys refill your beverages, grab whatever you need, and then we will be back with our player panel.